Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you from Studio 2 today, here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck.
Coming up on today's programme, we'll find out what books have sold well this week from independent booksellers in London, Shanghai, and the Red Wheelbarrow bookstore in Paris.
It's named after a poem by William Carlos Williams, which was written in the 1930s, because the poem, which begins, "So much depends upon..." was at the back of my mind because of all the bureaucracy involved in opening a business in France.
That was Penelope Fletcher from Red Wheelbarrow Bookstore in Paris. And we'll also be rifling through our latest musical finds from Japan with our fashion director, Takaharu Sato.
And we'll be working through the pages of our stack of magazines with our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell.
All that right here in The Review on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio 2 here at Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck.
Hello, sir. It's good of us to come in over Easter.
It is very good. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to
you.
Happy
Easter Saturday. It's also a bit of a homemade sort of family affair. It's sort of a kind of, well, a pre-Easter Sunday lunch.
Yeah, we've decided to keep it with the team Monocle today.
Yes, so we've got Takaharu Sato, who I think is somewhere upstairs in the building, looking through some of the things I brought back from Japan recently. So we're going to have a bit of a Nippon-style music collection this week. And well, there's going to be a variety of things we're going to be looking through with our editor, Richard Spencer. Or not, no, he's not our editor. You're the editor.
I'm the editor. He's our creative director.
Do you think Richard would ever stage a bit of a land grab?
Well, I think he gets cross occasionally. I kind of do a kind of an idea of how a page should look on the back of a post-it.
Right.
So it wouldn't surprise me if there was a kind of a reverse attack. And he's done a few little bits of writing for the magazine, and he likes being on the radio, actually, I think.
He likes being on the radio very much, and, you know, occasionally has been known to try to freeze you out of the decision-making process.
Yes, I do have to watch him occasionally.
Now, why have you decided to stay in town this weekend?
Well, I'm going away later this week to Geneva. There's a leading conference there for mayors from around the world. And Monocle's going to go and meet some of the people turning up there. So I've got 4 or 5 days kind of penciled out of the office anyway. So
right.
That's good. So I thought I'd stay in town this weekend.
And you're going to climb every mountain?
I'm not sure. I think maybe swim the lake more like in Geneva.
Well, exactly.
In fact, one of our friends there has insisted that I should go for a swim at his body.
Okay. At his body.
Maybe. I may go. I may not.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to the report on that. You're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. In a moment, we'll be heading to 3 bookshops around the world to check out what they've got on their stacks. So, it's time to spin the globe, and we're going to be heading around the world to look at a couple of bookstores. First, it's across the channel, isn't it, Andrew?
Yes. First, we're going to visit the Red Wheelbarrow bookstore, which is in Paris.
I'm Penelope Fletcher. This is the Red Wheelbarrow Bookshop. It's 22 Rue Saint-Paul in the Marais. It's named after a poem by William Carlos Williams, which was written in the 1930s, because the poem, which begins, "So much depends upon..." was at the back of my mind because of all the bureaucracy involved in opening a business in France. We always sell lots of Madame de Sévigné. She's our main book that we sell in this neighborhood because she lived around the corner, and people who go on tours throughout the Marais come in and they want to read her gossipy letters. Hair with the Amber Eyes has been a big seller as well. We sell a lot of children's books. Mr. Chicken Comes to Paris, different books of that kind of nature. Murakami's latest book hasn't been flying off the shelf, but that one people are quite interested in. Alice Munro's selected stories. We sell a lot of fiction at the moment. We're having a spring sale, so we're sort of cleaning out a lot of the classics or going off the shelf, such as Toni Morrison and different authors, you know. In our shop window, it's spring. Eva, my assistant, came up with Books Love Spring, so we've got lots of children's books around the theme of spring. We've got Julia Child's set of Cooking in France, because Mother's Day is coming up. It's Easter and Passover, so we've got books that go around that subject. We have piles of Nancy Mitford's book about the Sun King, Louis XIV, that's just been republished. Voltaire in Love, which has also just been republished by Nancy Mitford. And we've got the new biography about Edith Piaf, and that just came out in November, I think, by Carolyn Burke, called No Regrets. Everybody's reading Hair with Amber Eyes, and I recommend always the same books to everybody because I'm a dead author person. I love George Eliot and Middlemarch and Daniel Deronda, and I haven't yet read it, but the new William Boyd is what I want to read next. He's alive.
And that was Penelope Fletcher from the Red Wheelbarrow Bookstore in Paris. And she was dunking down under the table, I think, a few times to find the books.
Yeah, I wanted to think that she was actually hanging off the back of a ladder.
Oh, okay.
I thought she was sort of, you know, moving away from the microphone as she was, you know, maybe sliding her ladder along the wall.
She had a very nice, charming voice, and I love the fact that she was picking like Nancy Mitford and Julia Childs. It just sounded a kind of old world bookstore there.
It must be also interesting being there. I'm not in the Marais because I'm not sure if they're open, if she's open on Sunday. But it just has, she's got that wonderful sort of, she does have sort of the bookseller's voice, doesn't she?
Yeah, and she has that sound of somebody who's kind of washed up in Paris and is having the time of their life. She just sounds very happy in her little bookstore.
Better washed up than being a wash up in Paris.
Yes, exactly.
And next up, we're going to stay in London, and we're heading to West London's independent booksellers, John Sandu.
The shop's been here since 1957, and at that time there were quite a lot of bookshops in Chelsea. Now we're the only one, we're certainly the only independent bookshop. There are many reasons why we've stayed. One is, what you get out of a shop depends what you put in or what you hope to get out. All of those who've worked here, either in the past or now, have loved working here. And so we're happy to deal with our regular customers rather than wanting to grow into an empire. It means that we have contact both with the books that we're dealing with and also with customers. Close contact, which is much more than just that of one retailer selling a product to a passing person. It's, with books, it's more like the relationship, or can be more like the relationship of a GP to a patient, where you know a client in a narrow way, but you know them quite well. And you, if you like, you're ministering to that particular foible, in this case, books. Most of what we sell tend to be single copies of this or single copies of that. Looking for multiple copies, currently, obviously, the William Boyd would be, you know, we're selling a lot of that, and there are a couple of history books out, the Tom Holland, for example. There's a lot of good fiction. Samantha Harvey we've been selling a lot of. I expect to sell a lot of Peter Carey. Art books, there's we've been selling quite a few of a book called Holophusicon, which is published in Germany and distributed through Hawaii. So curiosity, which other shops wouldn't tend to have. So there is quite a lot of, not exactly oddities that come through here, but things that which we would be pleased to have picked up on and think that there's a market for, which other shops might have missed. We're a general bookshop, but we specialise or lean towards arts. So we don't really have anything technical. You wouldn't find any law books or engineering books with us. But a lot of art books, history, biography, architecture, travel, children's books, theatre, poetry, a lot of poetry we have. So broad range of arts-based subjects.
And that was Johnny DeFell from John Sandu Bookshop in London in the Chelsea area. Do you know the bookshop?
I don't actually.
That's very, it's, you want to talk about the classic sort of quintessential cozy bookshop. It's lovely, just tucked away in a nice little side street.
Was it there 2 decades ago when you lived down there?
Thank you very much.
Well, you were only 4 years old, but...
I wasn't there 2 decades ago. Isn't it amazing, though? Do you have to have a certain type of diction when you run a bookshop?
Actually, because both of our booksellers so far, they are of a type. I think they would get on well if they met.
I think a favorite that was probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had a bookshop in Munich, and there was this woman with very sort of scolding tones who talked about her bookstore in Munich as well. Do you ever have fantasies about having a bookshop, Andrew?
I think the idea of a bookshop is very nice, but I imagine... you probably need to read all the books, and I'm not very good at reading huge amounts of books.
You're not.
No, I'm
not.
Holidays is my time for kind of catching up. I'm very good at buying books.
I'm very good at buying books.
I own a lot of books, and then they kind of sit by my bed, and I read like 3 pages, and I'm asleep.
And do you think that's because, but you're just more drawn to what we're going to be doing a little bit later in the program, which is just to, almost a rhythm of dailies and weeklies and monthlies, because that's your trade, or.
Kind of. I think, I'm someone who in my journey to work is very short, or I'm on my bicycle. I don't have a huge
hard
amount
to pedal and
I don't have a huge
time,
amount of time that's actually at home. But when I go away, it's funny, the minute I'm away, I love reading books, and I can go through half a dozen in a week, and I just really relish it. I just need to have a bit of a clear mind and a chance to kind of get into a book. Because I think that's the other funny thing. I always find the first 10, 20 pages, it may take me a week to read them, and then the rest of it I can read in like a day. So it takes me a while to kind of get hooked.
Okay, but that won't be happening on this trip to Geneva, though.
Well, you don't know. Maybe in between the odd mare, there may be the time for a book.
Good. I just noticed there's a bit of a red theme, isn't there? You're taking us to China next, aren't you?
Yes, we're going to head to Shanghai now to the Red Bookstore.
No wheelbarrow.
Hello, my name is Zun Xiang. I have a bookstore in Shanghai called Red Bookstore.
We sell books about interior design, furniture design, architecture design. Graphic design.
Right now, one of our most popular books is called Kelly Hoppen. It's a book about interior design. We also have another book about graphic design and business card design. It's called Nice to Meet You Too, and it's a very good book as well. We have many books on the way into the store about furniture design, space design, and event design. One of my favorite books is called Casa Living. It's about the California-style design movement.
Casa Living.
My favorite book on display at the moment is about Chinese propaganda posters, and it has a very, very nice appearance. It's published by the German company Taschen. I really like this book because many, many years ago, in my hometown, there were posters like this hanging on the walls. It reminds me of that.
And that was Zun Xiang from the Red Bookstore without a wheelbarrow in Shanghai.
And I like the Beijing of China that's going on with the likes of Kelly Hoppen being the popular choice for interior design.
Yes, the Beijing and Toping and Donkeying. Well, there's probably plenty of donkeys in China. But
you say it shouldn't be in Shanghai because it should be called Beijing. That's the new taupe city in China.
I have a feeling that we're going to see lots of those balls made out of twigs. Wasn't that one of Kelly Hoppen's shticks?
Yeah, and
a range of always 3 balls in the middle of a dining table made out of twigs.
And then you have to cut the flowers off the top of the stems and just leave the stems in the bowl and tie it together with a bit of string.
I can imagine also that we're going to see vast tracts of not just of China. Chinese residences, but certainly places along the coast that are probably going to look like Malibu, if Casa Living is so popular in that region as well. Anyway, that was the Red Bookstore in Shanghai.
Next on the review, we sample some of our latest music finds from Japan. Stay with us.
From São Paulo to Sapporo, from Brooklyn to Buenos Aires, with a samba, bossa, jazz, poppier, rock and roller, frankly far superior station to discover the newest and finest sounds. This is the sound of Monocle spinning its musical globe. Check in with our editors turned DJs as they whisk you through the time zones as we take you continental, Atlantic and Pacific. Round the clock, round the block, music on Monocle 24.
Monocle Films, the cinematic eye on the world that brings you crafted stories from affairs to business, culture to design. Plus our regular Monocle briefings featuring original concepts in travel, food and retail. This week, we highlight bright and shiny hardware at the Singapore Air Show.
China marketed its upcoming C919, while on the smaller end, the Mitsubishi Regional Jet made its cabin mock-up premiere complete with a sushi bar in the stand. The first commercial jet ever made by a Japanese company, it's another promising model.
This and over 250 more films to be found in the programs menu on monocle.com.
Hello, you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Andrew Tuck, and Tyler Brulé.
And Takahiro Sato, who's just joined us in studio. Normally we have people down the line from all points around the world, but we thought we would just venture upstairs and drag you from your desk.
Thank you for having me.
And because certainly you've been a big part of the musical sound that Rob Bound was talking about a little bit earlier during our promo break. So we thought that we would... you've sort of been dipping into the pile upstairs, and you've found a couple of things for us to listen to.
Yes, lots of CDs from Japan, and then, some of, interesting remixes.
Okay.
You know, Japanese people are good at remixing things, so not only music, but also fashion, as you know. Some good track for, a night marathon.
Okay.
If you go for a run in Tokyo or anywhere in the world.
Okay.
Yeah. Also a good mixture of Japanese tradition and house music.
Okay, so we've got, we can sort of take up the rest of the afternoon if we wanted to. What do we have first?
First, it's by Half B.
Mm-hmm.
It's the song called The Lesson of O.N.O. The track was partly taken from Run DMC. And then the whole track, this whole track reminded me of the 90s hip-hop when the bootleg played a really important role. You know, it was illegal bootleg, but people thought it was really cool, you know?
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Halfbeat's new album, Leaders of the New School. This non-stop, fresh, wild, fly, bold, and solid music was made somewhere in Kyoto in 2011. Listen to the new message for Next School Creator. 91 was fun, lots of baked buns. Yes, yes, y'all, and you don't stop. Check this out, no stopping, say no stopping. Let's boogie down, let's boogie down.
That was sort of a bit of Ginza via Glasgow, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The female vocal has got a Scottish accent.
Was one of the lines, lots of baked buns?
Yeah,
some strange lyrics in there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Easter hot cross buns. I wanted you you're also back and forth a lot to Japan as well, and it's interesting. Just to, before you were saying that the Japanese are sort of they are very good at remixing things and the whole sort of culture of Kaizen and constantly improving things. But do you think that sort of led, Japan has definitely defined its own hip hop sound in a way, and certainly has a number of, international talents now who are, really, I think, sort of represent that genre in its own right. When you look around the musical scene right now, what else do you think is sort of interesting in the Japanese market right now? Do you see sort of any other sort of or hear any other emerging sounds?
Especially in Europe, I want to recommend Cruel Orchestra. It's organized by Kenji Takemi, DJ/music guru, basically. They have been around since a few decades, but they are not that well known in the world. But they're super, super music geeks, well done on research and music research and everything. He's got really, really deep knowledge about music, not only hip-hop, but jazz, classical music. Then they are releasing a new album quite soon. I think they have released a new album. And actually, I haven't listened to this yet, but I look forward to, listening to it.
And are you talking about someone who's more like Okina-san, a little bit like Kyoto Jazz Massive, so someone who is both producing his own work, but also, remixing and being a bit of a curator? Is it the same style like Kyoto Jazz Massive?
Yeah, it is. It is. He's got a bit of band. He plays, he DJs himself. He creates some, let's say original sound, but based on old songs.
Mm.
So it's the style is kind of similar to Okina-san.
Right.
Yeah.
You just mentioning Okina-san. Did you go for your run this morning, Andrew?
I didn't go for a run this morning, actually, because I was out a bit late last night.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
Oh, well. I did go for my run this morning. And I'm just looking at Take's post-it note here, because there is, one of the things that has definitely captured, not just Tokyo, but certainly Japan right now, is the whole running movement. And it's actually interesting to see how even Japanese running style, you know, is starting to sort of, you know, infiltrate, you know, the perimeter of Regent's Park as well.
And this is the clothing rather than the style of kicking your legs.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully it's the former, definitely. I always sort of feel sorry for those poor pigeon-toed Japanese girls who sort of shuffle around the palace. It's a little bit painful to watch. Nevertheless, and also it's a very good season now, because as it gets warmer in Japan, you see a lot of these sweet old dears who are probably in their 60s or 70s. They go running around the Imperial Palace, and there's not one square centimeter of skin showing, because they've got sort of the most massive sort of, you know, brimmed hats. You sort of think if they pick up a speed, they might fly away. They've got their gloves, everything, because God forbid that they should get any sun should hit their skin.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But going
that's
back
right.
to the fashion point, though, it's the whole leggings movement that sort of continues in Japan. Part of it also fueled by, you know, Jun Takahashi, his collaboration with Nike, what he's been doing.
I mean, Gekso project.
It's very serious. Now I've noticed people are starting to up their game around Regent's Park and London a little bit.
But in Japan, there is a real running movement that's taking off, is there?
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I guess in a way it was always there, but I've just noticed probably in the last, 3 years, it's become really serious, and like any serious movement, and, you know, not unlike our upcoming May issue with our focus on what's happened with dogs in Japan. You actually create an entire, you know, business sector around it, and I think the same thing has definitely happened. Not just with fashion, but in this case, when you go to music stores now, there are whole sections devoted to running music in Japan.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially the album I picked up, this Tokyo Marathon. Like, it starts, track one is done by Jill Scott, and then goes up. It's like the starting with slow track, and it gets faster and faster and faster as the CD goes by. Okay. So, like, you can just speed up with the music.
So this is the cue for everyone listening to pull on your shoes at this point. Set your polar watch.
Yes.
And what is this track called?
I picked up track number 7, mm-hmm. When Your Pace Goes a Little Bit Faster. It's done by Okino-san, Deep Into Sunshine.
And that was Deep Into Sunshine. Nice to hear India Davenport of Brand New Heavies fame. Haven't heard much from her lately.
And do you think that all the, you know, I know not that song, but do you think these CDs for runners are just songs that are just well curated? Or do you think that actually there are people now thinking, this would be a good song for, if I write it like this, for people to go running to? I wonder if there's actually musicians eyeing the running market now.
Yeah, that's a good point of view, actually. Maybe
I think you've come up with a good business concept for us, Andy.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a really interesting idea. I mean, I've often sort of thought about, you know, and I know that we do hear from a lot of people, maybe not this program, but certainly with the Monocle Weekly Tomorrow, who have also been, you know, following the program since its podcast days, that it was, you know, something that people were listening to in the gym, etc. And of course, there have been complaints because some people don't like that it's 2 hours now, because they have to stay on the treadmill for an extra 90 minutes even sometimes.
I presume there are lots of people just looking for exactly the right thing to listen to that 1 hour.
Mm.
Or 30 minutes in my case.
Okay, so if you weren't going to run a bookstore, Andrew, have you ever sort of had any sort of, you know, musical leanings? Aside from dance floors.
No, I think I had like 6 lessons on the recorder when I was about 5 years old. I could still do Frère Jacques if you want, but that's
okay. Well,
the limit of my music talent.
Everyone's looking forward to that. Taki, you've got one more for us in your musical pick, and I think this is a favorite of all of ours here.
Yes, it's done by Daishi Dance in collaboration with the Yoshida Brothers, who play shamisen guitar, very traditional Japanese guitar. They actually broke the rule of like playing shamisen. When you play those things, that you have to like keep your body straight, up straight in front of the audience. But they started playing those guitars like a rock and roll guitar, leaning towards the audience. There was a criticism that that's not very traditional that's not a very polite way of playing the guitar, but they were like, we don't care, just break the rule. Beautiful tracks. Then this strings like meet with house music. Okay. Very beautiful. I think you like it.
Okay, let's have a listen. And that was Japan-esque, or re-Japan-esque, by Daishi Dance. Very nice. Are you going to head off and tuck into your Easter chocolates now? After you do a run?
Yeah, after my running.
Excellent.
Yes.
Takahara Sato, happy Easter. Always good to see you.
Thank you very much.
You are listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. Back in a moment.
For a concise and sharply edited overview of the best clips, quotes, and quips of the week, tune into The Curator every Sunday right here on Monocle 24. Hosted by a different guest editor every edition, The Curator will point you to all the programs you might have missed and is also the perfect digest to the week in world affairs, business, culture, and design. The Curator, in association with Rolex, right here on Monocle 24.
The Menu is Monocle's delectable food and drinks program with me, Markus Hippi. On the menu, you'll find out about delicious edibles and mouth-watering drinks. We traverse the globe in search of the pioneers, making a stir amongst the food connoisseurs. We hunt down the wonderful and sometimes weird tasty trends that are making a buzz in the food industry.
We've been sort of traveling and collecting stories and collecting projects. So one of the things we hope to do is to connect all these narratives across these different geographies.
Milan to Tokyo, Buenos Aires to Auckland. Each week we send our correspondents to the far-flung corners of the world. We pop into independent bakeries, butchers and wineries to find people passionate about what they make. From French cheese to Bulgarian wine, from Japanese chocolates to South African caterpillar snacks. The Menu premieres every Friday at 1900 hours GMT. Join us for a drink where everything is on the menu.
That's The Menu, premiering every Friday at 1900 hours UK time in association with Krug.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here at Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, and Andrew Tuck, and you are listening to The Review.
Now, every Saturday here at Midori House, we pick some of our favourite magazine titles to rifle through. To help us dissect them, we're joined in the studio by our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell.
I'm glad you got the title right, Andrew. Because you hear earlier, I called you the editor.
Uh-oh.
I called you the boss.
Well, he was implying you've been squeezing me out of late.
I've been trying.
I know, that's what I said.
53 issues and not quite there yet.
There is a bit of a Japan theme today. I've got a stack of mags. Rich, you brought a number of things in. Last week we were talking and just carrying on with the running theme. What did you think of that magazine corner that I brought in back from Japan?
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Nice, you know, nice size, nice imagery, lovely content, very warm, like lots of things we get out of Japan. And when you compare that to the UK sort of running magazines on the newsstand, which are all sort of quite gaudy and very cheap stock.
I was having a bit of a fight with Hugo Better on the program last week because he was saying, he didn't think it was bringing much that was new to the table. But I said, Hugo, if you're not sort of going to a gym very often or running,
ever
beating a path around the park, then you would. But I think that's as you're saying. It was really interesting looking at this title that it actually. And I think a lot of what we've been talking about with running as well is that it's really given this overlay of lifestyle to running, that it's not just about, losing 5K for this or losing 5 kilograms for the season or how to run a faster 10K, but it sort of just encapsulated, people's life. And it was sort of largely sort of driven, the story driven in San Francisco as well.
Yeah, I mean, it had spirit to it. And I think, running is quite a spiritual activity, and it's most UK things or even sort of Western things, it's just product, it's just... Here's another set of neon trainers. How many times can you sort of tell that story and how many times can you look at that? I mean, even if you run regularly, you're probably only going to buy a pair of trainers once a year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you can buy one issue and you're kind of done for 12 months.
I mean,
they're not very inspiring. It's one of those things where you can see from the cover lines, you can see from the cover image exactly what you're going to get. It's going to hold no surprises.
No.
It's
sort of. You've seen it already?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay.
So I can't comment. That's why I'm sitting here nice and quiet doing my nails. Anyway,
once we leave the studio, you can zip back upstairs or maybe if someone's listening on the other side of the glass, someone have a rifle around behind your desk. Rich, what should we start off with today? What's in your stack?
Well, I did have a little... Also, we've just finished an issue, so my lunch hour's back, and I've been out and about in Marylebone trying to find some things. But I have to say, I couldn't find much when I was looking, which is a bit of a shame. And so I've opted for Japan too, and I brought in two mags and a kind of, I think it's a mag, but I'm being told by Poppy that it's actually a book. But I've got Hanako for Men,
mm-hmm.
and I've got Free and Easy, which you left on my desk after a recent trip.
Yep.
And I've got the Toy Poodle book, which we can maybe come to, which is a new favourite.
Just before we go to Hanako for Men, I've got Hanako, which is the big sister. Andrew, I'll give you that copy of Hanako for Men as well. And I've got Pen from Japan, and then I also have Huge, and there's just been a slight format change. But it has to be the heftiest looking magazine. We can talk about it in a bit, but it's incredibly light, and just the way they've used a really interesting paper stock. But just before you go to Hanako, or Hanako for Men, Hanako is really something of a fascinating product in the Japanese market. It's comes out every 2 weeks, and it has a bit of a sort of a peculiar beat in that it's very focused on, it's, you know, it's aimed at women, it focuses on food. They always profile, there's always an obsession with one celebrity, and then it's beauty. And I mean, and of course, you know, amidst all of this, you know, but you don't see any sort of dedicated fashion shoots. There's a lot of products, but there's just this huge emphasis on a bit of a girl's day out in a way. So it's, you know, where can you go to the best place to get gel nails, where can you go get a makeover, all of these types of things. And then it's just page after page after page of just incredible food. Now, to me, it strikes me there's a real opportunity that, I don't know, Andrew, I mean, you know, once upon a time you worked at Time Out, and I think that city magazine, even though Hanako is, I think they have some regional editions, or they had regional editions, I think now it's, they just do one for all of Japan. But it strikes me that it's a new approach to doing service in a very different way. And I feel that, you know, New York Magazine's been through a bit of a reinvention, but, you know, the Time Out brand is a little bit past its sell-by date, I think.
I think that the Time Out has a real kind of challenge on its hands. What's interesting is that for lots of those city magazines, they really have been so challenged by online. So if you want to find out what the film is that you want to see tonight, unless you kind of have a real kind of faith in one reviewer, you're going to look online. And it's the same with TV listings, that they don't have the, you know, there's no reason you'd buy a magazine now just because they had a great TV critic, it seems. So you have to add in another kind of layer. And I think that the Time Out's found that a challenge. Whereas you're right, I think when you look at New York Magazine, it's managed to mix a kind of really great reporting and a kind of a more curated selection of things to do in a city. Whereas I think the listings magazines, with this promise of kind of telling you everything that's on, makes it really kind of just too much, much too complicated.
Okay, late breaking news. We just had Corner Magazine zip into the studio. And first impressions, Andrew?
Well, it's interesting that it's in the neat format. So it's, what size paper is that, Rich?
Yeah, actually, it looks very similar to our trim, and now I'm looking at the black cover.
You're wondering.
It's not another one, is it?
Yeah.
It's a bit smaller than team than us, isn't it?
But is that smaller? Is that A5, do you think?
No, that's over A5. It's more like National Geo size, I'd say.
There's a density and richness, and I think also just the reproduction on this project is absolutely stunning as well.
So what's beautiful is they for example, there's a guy here, they've shot Jean-Michel Désir, and he's a sound engineer in LA, and they shoot him at home, preparing to go out for his run. They've got him playing his guitar. They've got him kind of warming up with his kids before he goes for a run. And then they have an amazing picture of him just kind of running down the sidewalk. So it kind of follows them through their whole life, doesn't it? It's about who these people are as well as their passion for running.
On just with that as well, there's, I mean, there's a small Japanese store. I think they do something up in the mountains in the front. But there's just that shot. What's the name of that gentleman there, Andrew?
Dennis Schofield, who's an architect.
I just love him walking out of his apartment, and then they show him in his place of work. And I just there's something about the contextualizing and the way they create this sort of narrative around people's lifestyles, which is also very attractive.
And there's another nice one here that Matthew Williams goes running with his Labradors. Again, it's not kind of running as in it's like painful and you're grueling. It's as you say, it's a more spiritual thing. It's like running is something that makes you feel good, and yeah, it's really amazing.
Yeah, I think you know that magazine makes you excited about running, makes you want to get back into it if you've sort of fallen out of it. It just makes you want to do the activity. And the Hanako Women's Magazine, that makes you want to go and explore the city.
Pork out. You want to chow out completely.
And I think the other funny thing is it's not really, which is the temptation when you do these sports magazines, it's not about the body, is it? It's not kind of rippling muscles, and it's not kind of...
No.
Actually, if you pass it, there's a shot of... there are a couple of shots of people, you know, with another T-shirts up and things like that. But, you know, there is a bit of a... a few love handles and things like that. But without sort of also just trying to be arch about it either. It's capturing sort of real people in real life. It's very well done. I do wonder, just going back, if it has been underwritten by. I mean, yeah, this guy's got a bit of a it's not quite a spare tire, but you know, it's a bicycle tire, around his waist. But it's I have a sense that this has been underwritten by Nike because there's no other advertising in it. But anyway, incredibly well done. Rich, let's go back to Hanako Men now that we've had a...
Yeah, so Hanako for Men is just a fantastic example of a good men's... I wouldn't even say men's fashion magazine, because I think it is just a magazine for men. There's tons of product in it. It's all relevant. It's all smart and nice. You want to spend your entire paycheck on all the stuff in here. Mm. There's weird little funny hobby things in there. There's a bit of cookery. There's places to see. It's inspiring. It's very, very warm. And it just highlights the fact that there is such a gap in the market in this country.
Well, I mean, you were saying earlier, so, you know, you went around the newsstands of Marylebone. And why did you come up empty-handed with men's magazines or otherwise? What do you feel what's lacking, or what's the gap in the market right now?
I think product. I think there simply isn't anything to buy from any of the men's titles out there. I think they're either too sort of East London and a little kind of, you know, fashion college student. Mm-hmm. Or they're just too predictable. And, you know, they just roll out the same, okay, here's this season suit, 8 pages. Okay, we've done our fashion for the month.
And always predictable designers as well.
The same ones. It's the advertisers. You know, we know you have to take care of them, but you're just offering nothing new. And most men's magazines, you can blitz them in like, you know, 5 minutes. You learn absolutely nothing new from them.
Right. Andrew, what's it?
It's just... interesting, the range of topics that they think men will be interested in, whereas men's magazines in Europe tend to be quite narrow focused. So this copy, it's got a piece about how to kind of design your perfect room, and it gives you advice on everything from the timber flooring you'll need to the light bulb you want. It's got pieces on cooking. It's got pieces on your music collection. It's got something on science. It's got something on women, but not in the kind of way that a kind of a Western magazine would do it. It's got things on retail. It's a much more diverse panoply of things that they think that a guy might want to read about.
Yeah, and it's all encompassing. It's, you know, it's representative of life and isn't showy or flash or bombastic in any way. Probably the men's magazine, when it does a food section, is they have to get all kind of Michelin starred and too much gastronomy going on. It's just like, come on, no one's going to do that.
Well, that's what I think is an interesting point, and Andrew, as you were going through it, that there is, it seems relevant and it's in an interesting context. I don't want to say it's not aspirational, because there are lots of great things to buy, but it's somehow not trying to point the reader into places that they almost sort of can't go. And as you're saying, like that point about, you know, how do you do your bedroom? Well, it just reflects Tokyo lifestyle. It's not saying that you have to live in some, crazy residence where you have to commission your own architect. It seems relevant to what is daily life in Japan. And there's, a very clear understanding of who the reader is as well.
I know this is a topic we may be getting onto again later, but they've also got a kind of pet corner.
I noticed that earlier. Actually, I thought I wondered if you'd catch your eye.
Well, I think Monaco should have a pet page. They've got a wonderful kind of bed place for your cat to sleep. Mm. And they've got a story called With Animals Special, How Does It Feel With Birds? And they've gone to an owl sanctuary.
Is that an owl sanctuary? Or he doesn't own that owl, does he?
And I think it looks as though it's more in a kind of... I think he may own it. But he's also got a collection of emus.
No, I think he must be at the Tokyo Zoo.
It's quite hard to keep an emu in your apartment.
Sure, especially a Tokyo apartment. But I think the thing I always take away from looking at these Japanese magazines is they always seem to make something very mundane and very uncool in this country seem very cool and very appealing. So, I'm not into camping or rambling, but when I see it in these magazines, suddenly you're just like, God, I need to get into that and get myself some new kit. And I didn't realize any new hiking boots or even hiking boots, but suddenly I've got to have them.
Well, there is that sense of desirability. And as you said, there are great things to buy. And oddly enough, not odd that he wrote it, but our culture editor Rob Bound has done a great piece in the next issue about catalogs and why we love catalogs. And I think that it's something that the Japanese do incredibly well. Not that these are just... Yeah, that these magazines are temples of consumption, but there is something sort of very inspirational, and they draw a very direct link as to okay, how are these things going to improve my life? And you may not sort of take the family rambling rich, but you might always need a nice new North Face jacket, right?
Yeah, always.
And do you think that there's a kind of a need to have a kind of better way of printing to be able to do magazines like this? Because to run so many pictures so small. Many Western magazines, I think their kind of prints, their print levels aren't good enough to do it.
Well, I think the print levels are coming down. That's the problem. I think people are cutting costs everywhere, and so people are going on worse stocks and printing quicker. And it's just everything's getting this slightly sort of washed out. Mm. Feels like it's been, gone through the washing machine feel about it.
I want to open up a card. There's an ad at the front of Hanako Men. It's for the Mitsui Sumitomo Visa card. And again, you can't be marketing a product in Japan unless you have a little character. And this is like it's a little wild boar. It looks like he's actually been in a toaster because it's striped down, so it looks like he's been grilled slightly. He's brilliant, isn't he? And again, like here's a for their Every Plus card, but you're selling financial services, but you need a fluffy little pig to do it.
And actually, there's some good advertising at the very front of that, which was about for your apartment. I think they've got the smallest dishwasher you've ever seen, the smallest washing machine you've ever seen. You suddenly realise kind of the pressure to kind of fit
those
into
Panasonic
it.
Ads are great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rich, we've got time just for one more before we go.
Well, sticking to men's but there's two choices. I'll let you choose. We've got another very good men's magazine, Free and Easy.
Free and Easy, which we like, and it just does, again, a wonderful catalogue and a very sort of defined style. But that's all we're going to give it, because we can't sort of miss the
we can't miss
the doggy mag you
toy
have there.
Poodle book. And this is a slight insight into our next issue. This actually, not the magazine, doesn't feature on the cover, but we do a story about the business of dogs in Japan. And this, I don't know who found this, I assume it's you, Tyler, but this is a magazine. I think it's a magazine.
Poppy says it's a book.
Poppy says it's a book. But for intensive purposes, it looks like a magazine. It feels like a magazine. And it's about the toy poodle world, and in particular, their haircuts.
Right.
And it is an absolute stormer.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, this was almost was the starting point for what accounts for Andrew, cover plus 8 pages in our next issue. And we look at the dog economy of Japan in our upcoming May issue. You've landed on the point of inspiration page, which is, what's the haircut called, Rich?
That one's Stylish Modern, but all these haircuts have names, and I actually stole the proof off the wall so we can read a couple of them out.
So if you've got something to do with your, or you want to give your dog a bit of a spring clean this weekend, you might want to go for the Peanut Mohican, Cupcake, pointy long hair, Prince Poodle, the Barbara Streisand, a Bob Marley, Shih Tzu face, up ears, the miniature Bedlington, but of course, our favorite doggy hairstyle of all is the Happy Ball Head, which is going to be gracing our next cover. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Richard Spencer Powell, our creator. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Happy Easter.
Happy weekend. And make sure you get out running with some of those tracks that Take was playing a little bit earlier. Our program today was produced by Dawn Trump, and it was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. You can, of course, catch up with the Best of the Week stories on The Curator, which is up next. And don't forget to tune in to The Monocle Weekly, which is tomorrow, 11 a.m. London time. For now, for all of us, have a great Easter. For me, Tyler Brulé, and
Andrew Tuck.
Have a good weekend. Goodbye.